At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And welcome back to Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson handling things for us. Big multitasker. Big multitasker.
Oh, he's, yeah, absolutely.
He's
look at him.
He's killing
it. He's like hitting all these buttons. He's on a phone. He does it all, man.
He does. So continuing this, Joe, this is such a sticky situation, for lack of a better phrase, with college football because fans are clamoring for it. They want something. They want a sense of normalcy on this, but also recognizing the fact that there's so much else at play here with what we see. Players want to play. A lot of players want to play, as we're seeing just in terms of reaction on Twitter and the social media landscape.
72,000 tweets with that hashtag as of, per our story, as of late last night. So that's a lot.
That's a lot. But then also we look at the liability situation that we closed last segment with and what this potentially could mean. Say, for instance, there's a lawsuit that happens 4 or 5 years later. That could happen, right? The guy gets sick and it ends up with some complications that he contracted, which people would say, well, how do you know it was from playing this? Well, you can do the contact tracing back, and then if the virus affected their health, what does it mean then? And I know a lot of university presidents looking at this, but it's a difficult decision because if you have these people that are clamoring to play, it all comes into, again, to representation of the players. And as we spoke about before, paid or not, professional athletes, they're choosing to make this. They're choosing that
right
option. That is their career that they're making that choice. And obviously we've seen in pro sports too, bubbles work, but you can't bubble up college football right now. There's just no viable option for that when they have to be attending class.
Yeah, like Chris Doering earlier said, and he's right, I think, with a lot of places, you know, okay, students don't show up and then you sort of have a bubble, but that's not the case at every place. And again, this is where – and I've heard some people say this is where college football needs a commissioner. I still think that in this situation, this is the president's. So when it comes down to it, it's still universities making decisions and not the athletic directors. They have a lot of input, and the conference commissioners definitely have input. But university presidents are making these decisions. So like, there's obviously different situations at different universities and in different conferences. And so one thing you automatically lack is that uniformity. Now, they've had, they've had, like, the medical panel that has put out the protocols for everyone. That includes Dr. Bill Schaffner of Vanderbilt has been involved in that. And, you know, I think you can look at the Power Five and say they can do things a certain way. They can afford to do things a certain way. And so that's why I still thought, you know, maybe the Power Five can still give it a go this fall. But that's the question that I asked last segment that I'd love to know is where would it have needed to be if this does get canceled for them to push forward? I don't know. Because, again, we all knew there was going to be a virus. We have no idea when the vaccine's coming. And we know that there are going to be cases and positives, and you know that's going to happen in the NFL. It's happening in baseball. People push forward. Again, every time you start talking, then you come back to their college students. They aren't employees. This is a huge money-making industry. Look, man, I mean, who doesn't love college football?
Right.
I mean, it's honestly, last night we were talking with my wife, and it was like, can you really like imagine Saturdays this fall like without it? It's a terrible thought. It's a terrible thought.
It is. And to reference that, too, it's we want it because we want something to talk about because that's our jobs is to talk sports. We want sports to happen safely. We want it to happen because that's what keeps us employed.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not that we don't want sports. We just want it done. We obviously want it done safely. We're reporting the news. And I want to question this on Big Ten, especially your experience with Big Ten, looking at some of the leadership in the Big Ten as well, especially Michigan State and the University of Michigan with the medical professionals that are leading those two universities. Do you think that's playing a role potentially why the Big Ten is making that big push, because of the epidemiology background and the medical doctor background of those two university presidents?
I hadn't thought of that. I thought you were going to go with some of the lawsuits that they've had.
Or that, too.
There's that, because, you know, they have that, too. That's a good question. I don't know. I've seen some of them quoted. That's a good question. I mean, look, it's kind of the same message across the board from medical people. Now, they have certainly learned things and changed their minds on things with the virus, which I understand people get mad about that. Like you said, masks didn't matter. Now they matter and all that. Like, yes, that things have changed for medical professionals. But pretty much across the board, I know the Detroit Free Press quoted, was it a Michigan or Michigan State doctor? I don't remember which one. I can't believe I'd get those two mixed up, Justin. But his comment was basically just, look, this is about the country. This is, at a certain point, we thought that it could be feasible because it was going in a good direction, and then it went in the other direction. And whatever you think about that and what it means, it does mean something to these people. Now, again, I will ask the question of where was the line if this happens? Where was the line where, okay, you feel comfortable doing it? There are some people that will say there never was one. There are some people who said from the start in March, like, well, you can also count out college football. I mean, Kirk Herbstreit tweeted a little warning shot about what he thought about college football and then was killed for it months ago. And that may be true, too. Maybe this has all just been kicking the can to the inevitable. I don't know that answer. But obviously, they put a lot of time and effort into trying to make this happen, and they've put out these revised schedules. And I don't think it's all just window dressing. I think there are a lot of people who have obviously want this to happen. The problem is that at some point, the university presidents make the decision.
So looking at this, it's a tweet from Zachary Binney. He's from the Emory University and does a lot of qualitative analytics when it comes to sports, especially football, NFL, and quote tweeting Trevor Lawrence and saying that there's no actual evidence for this convenient narrative about being safer on college campuses compared to being safer at home, and saying, well, there's no solid evidence to create a more dangerous environment either. Honestly, you'd be right due to inconsistent reporting and lack of testing, but Clemson had greater than 40% of their team infected. To say their players were safer on campus is hogwash. Many other schools have had outbreaks in the 10 to 30% range, and you have to expect that will broaden with practices intensifying and students returning. It's going to be real hard to sell me on those being safer environments COVID-wise. So understandable argument from an epidemiologist on there as well. So it's going to take a tremendous amount of effort from these universities to make this happen. You can't just say, okay, yeah, you're on campus, you're safer. But maybe on campus, they recreate their own football bubble too. Like, they're going to have to be virtual, but on campus. They're going to and how many students, 18 to 21, are you able to tell so many of the things, are they going to be able to follow it? Especially how many players are on a college football team? A lot. That's a lot of people you're having to quote-unquote control to be in a certain environment. And controlled environments is where you can safely pull these things off. I just find that really difficult to be able to do for a lot of these. You'll have plenty of students that are doing the right things. You have plenty of staff that are doing the right things, that want to play. But it's going to take buy-in from every single person associated to make this happen. And that's what's going to be difficult, is having total buy-in, because that's what you got from the pro leagues, especially now with the NHL being successful, the NBA, and even the MLS, once they finally got Nashville and Dallas
right.
out of their bubbles, was buy-in of bubbling up. And it's so difficult to pull it off with college campuses to have 100% buy-in.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, you think about an NFL team, and everyone, there are different levels. There are star players, very highly paid players. There are young players who aren't making that much. But there's still – there is a certain level of everyone has a lot on the line here. And on a 100-person college football team, there are some people who have no NFL aspirations, who actually having a scholarship is a great thing. You know, you get free college and you're on a team, but it's not – the same incentive. And so you have those people, are they going to do all that's asked to, stay safe, stay away from people? I think Chris Doering made a good point that, like, really, it's been pretty impressive over the summer as these teams have come back. You've had some outbreaks and things like that, but obviously they're trying hard and they're working, and you feel for them. But that it was always going to be a problem, and you're never going to be able to have any kind of actual bubble.
Right.
It's a, so, you know, it's – you know, you if you had something where every college was going online, then I suppose you could pull it off. That's not going to happen. Another thing is I think there's an argument a lot of people have made, Justin, about the idea of – okay, so these players – Trevor Lawrence tweeted last night. If these players now go home, you know, where are they safer? Are they safer, you know, at the football building, around the medical professionals? Are they safer at home? One question I do have about that is, are they going home right now? I mean, I guess I would think that they'd still be in class. I mean, they're on scholarship.
At least one day a week or something.
Yeah, they're college students. And again, the answer to that, honestly, it's that one word again. It's liability. I mean, that's and it's the sad truth here, but that's reality of how these people are looking at it.
And this coming from Jamie Erdahl, talking about mental health. She tweeted about players' mental health, especially getting canceled, things like that. We have so much, and it's not just college football, looking at all these athletes as well, and looking at something that they live for, that they play for, something that they love, and if it's taken away from them as well. And this, it doesn't matter if you're for or against canceling sports right now, but it is an extremely important topic to talk about the mental health of these players, the support that they can get, whether or not it goes on or not. Because if it goes on, it's still going to be a very different situation, and they're going to have to be living under strict rules and very impressionable ages right now, too, from listening to their coaches, listening to people at the universities, people they look up to, and how important it's going to be for mentors to be talking with these players of any sport going on right now or not going on. That mental health is going to play a very important role because, I mean, I don't know about you, Joe, but through especially when we had the major lockdown going on, depression started to kick in. I mean, just feel sad and dreary, and especially when we had those rainy days just added to it. You're like, oh, the rain's great. Oh, what am I going to do with my life? All those things come into play with this, and that's just me sitting at home as well when I was working from home. But I can't imagine this being taken away from players, something that you live for, you've been looking forward to, or maybe you're an incoming freshman and you have that star quality and this is going to be your time to impress, or you're a senior like Trevor Lawrence or potentially going in as well, knowing that, hey, he's going to have a career, but he still wants to play. He still wants to win a national championship. But this being taken away from them can do to their mental health is going to be absolutely vital for the universities to provide support for their students, athletes, and all their students. I mean, not just students in general going through a pandemic, something we haven't seen in 100 years, and things have changed so much with social media, people having this access to just so much information and misinformation and every kind of information out there. Why mental health is going to be so important for universities to provide that to their students and their student athletes too.
Yeah, no question. Access to each other too, and access to these student athletes as well. I mean, it does not help. Already, I mean, The toxic nature of Twitter really has taken a bump here in the last day. But to your point, this is moving forward. I mean, you think about the seniors in high school who lost their spring season. Some seniors in the fall in different states, the same thing. It's heartbreaking because for a lot of those kids, they aren't going on to college. And for a lot of these college athletes, like Trevor Lawrence is going to go play in the NFL. Like, he'll be fine. I'm so impressed with the way he's taken – a leadership role here,
absolutely,
by the way. But there are a lot of these guys who they're not going to the NFL and they know it. And this was maybe the senior year and you get so excited about what your team might have been, your schedule. It's so much a part of your identity in life. And that is something that cannot be overlooked.
Okay, up next on Morning Drive, we're going to switch back to hockey. Matt Duchene has been the topic of discussion so much over the weekend and the past few days on his performance in the playoffs. That's up next here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson with the great tunes. Love it.
He's having a good Monday.
Yeah, having a great Monday. Hey, joining us right now, we have Corey Curtis from News 2. Let's talk a little bit of everything going on in the landscape. Corey, welcome to the show.
Good morning, guys. Sorry I'm a few minutes late. I was locked up in a vicious game of telephone with my daughter this morning.
Okay, explain that.
Yeah, we need to know.
Well, it was me, my daughter, Monkey, and Teddy, and we were playing telephone, and time got away from me.
Like telephone, like where you pass it around the circle and The message
gets, and
okay.
You find out what you're saying when it's all over. And when you have two inanimate objects involved, it really gets interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Corey, go ahead and jump right into things, too. And I just want to bring up the Tennessee Titans because we want to focus on this as well. And okay. Vic Beasley finally reporting and getting everything done. Just this overall breadth of this as well, finally getting that. And now we're looking at him getting through the COVID testing, him reporting to camp, and finally getting through with this. We've been talking about this for so long in terms of sports here in Nashville. So what does it mean to the team to finally be able to focus now with having him report?
Well, I mean, it's still all just weird. I mean, to be just gone for 10 days and give away potentially like $1.6 million, and we have no idea why. And I guess people can say it's none of our business, but it kind of is our business. I mean, it's what we talk about, and fans want to know. I mean, fans are angry. Fans are disappointed. Fans want to know, you know, because they're counting on this guy to take their team to the next level, and, you know, they want to know if they can count on him. And right now in the can I count on you meter is not measuring very high. You know, now the players all said it's his business and all that and all the, you know, really all the right things. But, you know, he's to me, he's starting by, if I was one of his teammates, he'd have to prove some things, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I agree, Corey. I do think, you know, there's, I guess, two groups within the Titans organization that probably look at this a little differently. Like, I could see Vic Beasley endearing himself to his teammates, you know, show up, do the work, demonstrate that you want to be there and play and take part. And I think that the locker room would probably move on pretty quickly. You know, I think for the most part, guys understand what this league is and how, and especially in this time, how decisions are even more complicated now. But if you're John Robinson and company, you can't feel great right now about this situation, right? And then I guess my question for you is then, do you think that also frames how they look at other potential players out there that they might add?
Well, you know me, Joe. I've felt they, even with Beasley, they still need to add Clowney. And I still look at that defensive line with the Jarrell Casey hole and say, how do they replace it? So I still think they need to add the big guy, if at all possible. You know, especially if you're running after Mahomes and Watson and all these guys, you need as many of these guys as you can get, and there's a really good one out there. So I think regardless of Beasley, that they should go get him. But, you know, for me, I am still wondering. My big concern right now is how committed is he to this football team? Because I don't know why he was gone. So I'm wondering how committed he is to this football team. I still wonder, will he be there week one? Because these situations don't ever work out well when guys are mysteriously gone. Or, I mean, there's not a lot of them. But when guys just aren't there, there's just not a lot of record of things going well.
And continuing to look at this as well, looking at the rookies finally hitting the field. We're seeing these images because we're not having much access right now to seeing things aside from Zoom meetings.
There'll be none.
Yeah. So you have these Zoom conference calls. That's about it. We're seeing images of the rookies. Looking at this as well, what rookies are we looking at making that initial impact? And if anything, will they make an impact?
Well, I mean, some are going to have to. But I mean, that's the really big question. I mean, we had Floyd yesterday. We talked with him some about is it even realistic to have the same expectations for this rookie class that you would have for normal rookie class? Because I don't think so. I mean, you can say they had a great virtual offseason. A virtual offseason doesn't teach you the speed of the National Football League, doesn't teach you, you know, the way that you do things, doesn't teach you the nuances of the defense when you're on the field communicating with your teammates. You know, that all comes from doing it. And they're missed out on a whole lot of time of doing it. So I would think it's going to be a slow start for a lot of those guys. But, I mean, some of them are going to have to contribute. You know, thankfully, you know, Isaiah Wilson, you know, has somebody in, you know, with him there with Dennis Kelly where he doesn't have to come in. He doesn't have the pressure of, okay, you got to come in and start day one. You're a first-round pick. I don't think that pressure is there. Does that mean he can't start day one? No, no, it doesn't. But he doesn't have to. Now, I think, you know, Christian Fulton's going to have to play some. And Darrington Evans is going to have to play some. You know, but thankfully, I think for running backs, you know, outside of pass protection, I think it's, you know, those guys, you can give them smaller packages and they can do okay. And so I expect him to do that. You know, but Fulton, you know, the pressure is certainly going to be on. And it, with the defensive line situation, you know, Murchison may have to contribute. So we'll see how ready he is to go.
And again, Corey Curtis, News 2, joining us here on Morning Drive. And Corey, in the Athletic, they have the Titans defense ranked 18th currently, mm-hmm. last year at 16th. How much of a difference is Jadeveon Clowney going to make in terms of boosting that defense up? We that's an obvious question, of course, but do you think it's going to make mm-hmm. enough for them to improve into, say, top 10, or is it just a few spots that you think they would rank them in terms of the NFL?
Well, look, if Beasley can manage to stay in town for a while and they could add Clowney, I mean, I think that can move them up into the you know, the top 10 range. I don't think top 5, but I think, you know, in that 8 to 12 range, I think it can move them up into there for sure. Because, you know, what's the difference between having Jadeveon Clowney line up as your defensive end or having Isaiah Mack or Jack Crawford? I mean, to me, that's pretty significant. And so, you know, I think that's a reasonable investment to make your defense better. I could be wrong on that, but I look at it and I see it as a real difference. I mean, you know, I think fans look at Jadeveon Clowney, some do, and they look at the 3 sacks from last season. They think he's overrated. They think he's, you know, not as good as all the hype. And maybe he's not as good as all the hype, but he was rated number 41 in the league by his colleagues. And he may not be the best 41st best player in the National Football League, but that's what those guys think of his ability and his impact on games. So, you know, he is someone you have to account for on the field, and he does make plays. You know, you go back to last season and he may have only had 3 sacks. He had 4 fumbles. I think he scored 2 touchdowns. He's long, he's strong. He sets the edge. You know, he's very good against the run as well. You know, he does a lot of things to make your defense better. And I think he could certainly make the Titans defense better.
Okay, Corey, let's switch to the NFL's unofficial farm system. Things do not look good at this point for college football. Nothing has been mm-hmm. decided or voted on yet, but what's your view of that situation?
You know, it's interesting, Joe, because, you know, yes, COVID-19 is certainly a reason to shut it down and something that everybody's talking about with it and, you know, the driving force. But, you know, I think the other factors involved here are these institutions' fear of getting sued, number one. And number two, you know, you saw yesterday again with players on Twitter, the players organizing. I think players organizing, you know, is another big problem for these universities. And I think they don't know what to do, frankly. I think that there's a lot of fear. But, you know, another point I heard brought up yesterday, and I agree with it, is you were just putting out revised schedules a few days ago, and now suddenly you're ready to can the season. What was the big switch? Is the MAC canceling games your big switch? Because if the MAC is making decisions for everyone, then we should just get rid of all the other league commissioners and just put Giant Steinbrecher in charge.
Maction. I love the Maction. Yeah. Well, no, and you're right. It looks it looks that way because they make the decision Saturday. Now this all coming out. I mean, I think those things are independent of each other to a certain point. But I think you're dead on about fear. I mean, everyone is afraid. Everyone has been afraid to make a decision and has been trying to push it. And now we're at the point where you've got to make a decision.
Well, I think they should keep pushing it. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying we're going to keep pushing it. Just say, hey, the numbers are too high. We want to play, but we can't play in the situation we're in right now. So we're going to keep pushing it in hopes we're going to play. Why not just say that?
Yeah, yeah. There's going to be more. That may be said this week, and it may be, Corey, that some leagues do something, and we still wonder for a while about other leagues, which would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
too.
Hey, we've been begging you to wear masks, but we're telling you right now, if you don't put masks on, we're not going to play.
make it that simple.
Yeah. I mean, hey, these coaches have been trying.
They've been trying. Well, Corey, we got to get to break, but thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your insight.
Yep. Sorry I was a little late, guys.
All good. All good.
Good,
get that coffee.
Thanks, bud.
All right, up next, we're going to get back to the Predators, talk more about Matt Duchene. Are the Preds trending up or down right now as well? Joe, I know we have some thoughts on that. All that up next here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Matt, last season, this team made some changes, and you were a big part of that, of bringing you in. How would you assess your first season with Nashville overall?
Up and down. Obviously, we went through a lot of adversity this year, so I, myself included, and I think obviously every adverse situation you get put in is a chance to grow and chance to learn and move forward. So I've got a lot of years left in Nashville. I'm proud and so happy to be here. I love this team. I love this group, and I believe in this group. And I know, better days are ahead for sure.
Welcome back to Morning Drive. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, Keith Muntz behind the glass. And Joe, did you know that you can stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere? Did you know that?
I did, but tell me more.
Oh, so you download the Game Nashville app. You can enable our Alexa skill or Google Home and ask play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. That's thegamenashville.com.
My daughter downloaded the app Friday, so I could give her a shout out on the first day of school. So that's one more app downloader that I can absolutely confirm in the last week.
But just Friday, not before then?
Well, you know what? It should have been before then, but now she's got the app, and
okay, I question the parent.
Well, hey, we could spend the whole show on why you should.
Well, a lot of other questions, and that was a good question by Chase McCabe, and you can hear him later today on Darren Donick and Chase from 10 to 2 here on 102.5 The Game, to Matt Duchene. And he even said up and down. And it's been up and down for Matt Duchene, who's become sort of a journeyman lately before coming to the Predators. I mean, being with Colorado, then over to Ottawa, then Columbus, having a fantastic playoffs for Columbus last season, which I guess garnered the $2 million raise, coming over to Nashville, and then only 42 points in 66 games, 13 of those goals. Up and down, for sure, and then up and down in the playoffs. His up was the last game of the playoffs for him, too.
Yeah, after, you know, a game three mistake that won't be forgotten. I mean, it's one of those things that people are going to talk about when they talk about Preds playoff history, because it was just such a huge moment and not your average offside and very costly. He did respond to that. I think you saw some of what he can do. Watching him this year, Justin, I think that, first of all, it's not, I think there was certainly some overestimation of what he was coming in, just because it has been this, you know, this odyssey of pursuing him for so many years for David Poile. And anyone who would watch him, you know, he's a good player. Like you said, he was great for Columbus last year, which, by the way, Columbus was supposed to be buried after they lost all those guys, and now they're moving on.
The three guys that moved on did not make the playoff round.
Right.
How about that?
So good for Columbus. But with Duchene, I think that he is, and I mean, most players are, but somewhat dependent on who he's playing with, and they've got to find that right mix, and I don't think they have it. I think putting Forsberg with him makes sense, but how can you, after this playoff, do anything but put those top guys together again and say, everybody else got to figure it out, but these guys are too good together?
They are. And looking at this, too, I think one of the questions we come into as well is, especially in the beginning of the season, when he was signed, and it was asked, because we knew there was a plethora of centers, not necessarily plenty of top centers on the team, but plenty of centers with Ryan Johansson, Colton Sissons, Nick Bonino, Kyle Turris, Cali Yarncroke. All those guys are supposed to be centers. And the question to Matt Duchene was, are you okay with playing wing? And he said, my conversation with Peter Laviolette is I prefer to play center. I want to play center. And then you had him playing a mix of center and wing. So I'm not wanting to necessarily put the fault on someone else, because he needs to perform wherever he's placed, but he needs to be in a position to succeed as well. And he wants to be playing center. and then you need to supply him with wingers that are going to supplement him very, very well to where he can put up the points. Because when you look at point production, and I know Jeremy K. Glover wrote about this way long ago, but what to expect from Matt Duchene, and I know people are saying, you can expect the 70 points, things like that. Well, he's only reached the 70-point mark, what, once?
Yeah, one time.
One time, and that was in 13-14, and he played 71 games, so it was basically a point per game player, which is fantastic.
That'd be great.
6 years ago. And so the expectations, I think, should be around the 50 to 60 at most for him, which $8 million is a lot. But if you're winning, that's fine. Winning fixes everything when it comes to that. If you're winning championships or making deep runs, that'd fix things. But the expectations were very high for him because you have two $8 million centers. And like we said way early on, one of them showed up in the playoffs overall. One of them did not. And now the Predators have a potential chance at the NHL draft lottery, which happens today at 5 p.m. You can watch that. They might get the number one pick, which you'd hope would mean Alexis Lafrenière coming
Whoa.
To the Predators.
That pronunciation just blows everyone else away. Say that again.
Alexis Lafrenière.
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 I've been saying Lafrenière. Yeah.
Well, that's wrong. I watched a lot of videos, Joe, just to make sure. Because I'm like, if they're going to get him, then I need to get it right.
You got
to
be. Yeah.
But that situation, you look at so many different things, and yeah, you don't want to blame one player. Obviously, you don't want to blame one player. It's a team sport. But that offside was detrimental to this team. And especially when you look at the play, there was no reason to be offside. It wasn't like, oh, the turnover happened, you're in the offensive zone, got to tag back up or anything. It was just offside for being offside because you just misjudged it a little bit. And it wasn't the Forsberg in the Stanley Cup final where he had the puck, possession of it, and the skate was off the ice.
Right.
It was offside. And easy for them to catch and to tell, which is extremely frustrating because those types of mistakes you just cannot be making. There's other mistakes that I think you can say, okay, it was in the spirit of the game. Things happen, heat of emotions, things like that. This cannot be happening. And especially what's worse is it wasn't an offside, just, oh, we're going to have another faceoff. It was offside. Kyle Turris actually scored a goal. Ugh.
A goal that could have completely changed the series.
Completely changed the series.
And there's no way to prove this. But I know that as soon as that happened, I said, well, they are definitely going to lose now.
Just the way it was going.
And that doesn't mean that all the other plays that happened after that were destined to happen. But that's how it worked out. I mean, they didn't sag, but there's just a – when you have a lost opportunity like that and a mistake like that, it seems like a lot of times it ends up costing you. And the thing with Duchene is – we talk about all these different things that David Poile can do and might do, and I don't know if I would put Duchene in the absolute untouchable, but pretty much. They're not
after
doing anything with Duchene
after 1 year.
They sign him to this huge deal. I mean, that would be an admission of just completely botching this. And like you said, David Poile knows well what he is. I mean, I guess the best season, you know, in 18-19, he had 58 points in 50 games with Ottawa, including 27 goals. He gets traded to Columbus.
Right.
Has a great playoff. So it's like, wow, that's some of his best hockey right there. He's also 29 years old. But you've got to hope that over the next few years that he's around a 60-point guy. And also, like you said, that you're winning and that his line is giving you what they've looked for years, another line to supplement those guys. Because those guys, I think John Hines, I'm fairly confident in saying John Hines is like, yeah, okay, I've seen this now and this works.
Right. Absolutely.
I don't see how you stray from that, you know, in the near future. So it's not just Duchene's production. It's the other things coming together. And I think it is on the Preds to give him help here.
Absolutely. And we just saw it wasn't working out. Now Mikael Granlund, we saw a boost from him before the pause as well. It seemed like he was fitting into the system a little more loose, not as much dependent on what he was needing to do in the other end, but more on, hey, focus on the offense. And he looked happier as well. And he was scoring goals. He was out there making things happen, causing a ruckus as well. But it's still overall this line in the playoffs does not perform. And so, for instance, what I'd like to see, It'd be nice, Philip Tomasino, maybe, to see what happens there. That's where preseason games would be very important to see some chemistry, or even in Elli Tolvanen. Tolvanen, as we talked about before, is a little more responsible in the defensive zone now, which you need in the NHL. You don't have to be fully responsible, but we saw what a little bit, a slight tweak can do, like Barry Trotz with Alex Ovechkin. Small tweaks. You don't have to say, yeah, you need to go play defense, be a two-way forward. Slight tweaks. And what they did for Elie Tolvanen helped him with his game in Milwaukee to where now you put up in a place to where he can set up for a wicked one-timer. Because Elie Tolvanen has a fantastic shot.
Oh, tremendous.
A fantastic shot. But he has to be open for that. And like Matt Duchene, especially when he has possession, he can be a great possession forward if he's in it. And if he's feeling, just like Ryan Johansson, we've seen his big body, what he can do to box people out and not let them get anywhere near the puck and just maintain possession. But you're able to do that to open up space for a guy like Elie Tolvanen. I'd like to see that, the youth movement, but you have a youth paired with someone that's a veteran that can be there. Because I'm not saying you get rid of Matt Duchene right now. There's just that one, that's not happening, folks.
Yeah.
If people are calling to trade him, things like that, one, the trade value is not going to be there. You really want to say you botched something? Trade value is not there with what you'd get in return. And two, it's only been 1 year. And his contract is, God, not tradable.
No,
it's not
all.
Tradable at all. So you try to put him, like you said, Joe, with players that both can be successful. They work off of each other. I think if you're putting him with Tomasino or Elie Tolvanen, and you try it. You try it out. Because right now, what do you have to lose besides more games? you've lost in the qualifier round. You have to retool a little bit. You're not in a rebuild mode because you really can't afford to be in a rebuild mode. You see a small, slight window potentially there. Take advantage of it and let the youth movement roll in, because you know Jofa's going to be Jofa, hopefully. And you have Matt Duchene as your second-line center, actually playing center right now. And then you supply him with wingers that can hopefully get it done for you. Small tweaks. Because a rebuild's just not in it right now. He's not a tradable contract, so you got to try to provide him with something that's going to work.
Is it possible that they find another top six forward out there somewhere for something in some way with some kind of deal to bring in for him?
Anything's possible.
Yeah.
Anything's possible when you have free agency in October. All right. Up next, we're going to talk about the Preds' trends. Are they trending up? Trending down. I'm sure plenty of you have opinions on this as well, especially since the Stanley Cup appearance. What has been going on for the Predators? Up next, Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Hi, Philip. Since this team made it to the Stanley Cup final 3 years ago, there's been a downward trend in the postseason. Second round 2 years ago, first round last year, qualifying round this year. What do you make of that downward trend?
I mean, you can't really say anything really about, like, we got guys that obviously it's been a part of the ride for a year, for two, for three. There's some guys that have been here the whole time. And I mean, it's every season is a new year. I thought last year Dallas outplayed us pretty bad in the playoffs. And we earned that first round exit. But this, like I said, we definitely played well enough to win. But at the same time, we got to find that way to win these close games. And at least like I said, I thought everybody came ready to play for this short season, whatever comeback. And yeah, I mean, like I said, we got to find a way to win, but we definitely did enough good things for it to fall our side.
And welcome back to Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexrow, and Marquise Munson. And Nashville Predators. We'll continue that conversation out of the qualifiers. And that question by Adam Vingan, your colleague, to Philip Forsberg there, just pointing out what we've all seen, the downward trend. And it's hard to think about something opposite than that, about downward, because from the top, it's just been the spiral right now. With expectations being very high for this team and seeing series that they absolutely could have won if little things would have happened. So I'll go back first to start off against the Jets. And we look at, say, the power play or mental mistakes. What could happen there? That, obviously, they lost in seven games, so it could have went either way in game seven. They could have won that, made the conference final, which I think would have been understandable to lose there because that's considered a deep run, your conference championship. But then the Stars, the power play was awful.
0 for 15.
Awful in that series. And you think if they were just average, not have to be great, just average, what could have happened to the Stars? They probably could have won that series as well. And then this one, they play really well overall against the Coyotes. They play really well, can't get anything to break. Darcy Kemper steals a series, but then again, they make some mental mistakes. I'll throw in the Craig Smith penalty.
Oh, yeah.
What was brutal? The offside, the little mental mistakes that take them out of this series and lose in four games to the Coyotes. all these different little things have them trending down right now, which is why I've been continuing to call for changes have to be made, which I think even David Poile mentioned way back when, that if they don't make a deep run, he knows changes will need to be made. The brevity of those, we don't know what he thought. But I'm calling for at least three, four players changed.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're a Predators fan listening to Philip Forsberg there and you were upset by that, I totally get that. I mean, to me, you can't expect these guys to talk about blowing it up or right. Any of these changes. But you wanted a little bit more of this just wasn't good enough out of the players. So I'll ask you this, Justin, because a year ago, I think we all said it and all knew it that – Subban was going to be moved and that they were going to go after Matt Duchene. It's exactly how it played out. I do think that this team, and in the last 2 years have been largely frustrating. I know they won the Central Division, you know, in 18, 19, but it was still a largely frustrating year like this past year was. But I do think that this year they missed some of what he brought intangibly. And I think you think about that run. I thought he was the guy out front in terms of just a little bit of edge, willing to mix it up with whoever, willing to say something in the locker room like, "Yeah, we're going to win this next game," things like that. And people have brought up James Neal again, like not going to get into the whole protecting James Neal thing, but that was another guy who had some of that to him, and I do think that's personality-wise something to look for to add to this team. I think they need more people with a little bit more
a jerk.
Yeah,
a jerk that can produce.
Yeah, a jerk who can play. Right.
A jerk who can play. You know, Tom Wilson, he's a jerk but he can produce. Brad Marchand, he's a jerk but he can produce. Matthew Tkachuk, he's a jerk, he can produce. See the trend?
There are guys like this.
There are definitely guys like this, and I mean just like a true number one center, they don't just grow in trees. They're not a dime a dozen out there. So when I see this as well, it's drafting those types of players and knowing that it's going to be there, whether it's through interview process and whatnot, is trying to find these guys. And it's hard to tell what they're going to turn into, but sometimes you can have an idea. But yes, I totally agree, is something like that, because we have people that are clamoring for, well, we need a guy that can just fight. You mean you want a guy that's going to play 3 minutes and right. not do anything else for you? Well, Cody McLeod.
I was going to say, bring Cody McLeod back.
A timely goal here or there is not the full reason for it, folks. You need a guy that's going to be able to put up 35 points, 30, 40 points. That's producing at least for bottom six. But if you really want, you know, a Brad Marchand, they're not just hanging out there. A Tom Wilson's not just hanging out there. Tkachuk's not just hanging out there as well. They develop into those things. They're just able to produce, and they notice, hey, I have the personality that gets under player's skin. I'm going to use that. And they use it really, really well. But that's what this team could use. I don't see necessarily any of that in free agency. It's going to be tough to come by, but I absolutely agree that's something they could absolutely use in the middle six right now, is a jerk that can absolutely produce for them and score those timely goals, get under another team's skin, know how to get in front of the goalie and rattle them a little bit too. Maybe there's a player in the system that could end up being a little bit like that. I mean, they've missed a lot, and you brought up James Neal, but they've missed a lot of the net front presence since Patrick Hornquist left. And that's a long time ago. When you really think about it, that is a long time ago to think about the net front presence, because Patrick Hornquist was the Tomas Holmstrom of that little generation. I'm throwing it back for
Bringing
you,
Bringing back some Red Wings classic hits.
But it's the guy that was a pest in front of the net. Yeah. And the goalie, no matter the size, because Hornquist wasn't a tall dude, but boy, oh boy, did he cause a ruckus in front of the net to make it to where the goalie had to be aware of him and where the puck was at the same time, which made it very frustrating to be a goaltender and a defender as well. And Hornquist produced. Now, I'm not saying he got under people's skin, but just his style of play got under the skin because he was always a pest around the net. They don't really have that much. I mean, Arvidsson goes here sometimes, but then he gets destroyed.
Yeah, you don't want him take. I mean, how many more hits does he have to take?
Right.
It's just not.
A healthy Victor Arvidsson is fantastic, but you got to keep him healthy and put him in a position to stay healthy.
And you want him on the rush, and you want him
right.
doing other things.
On the rush, taking a slap shot from the circle and scoring, because that seems to be what he does.
You mentioned Holmstrom. How about Dino Cicerelli before him?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I mean, just the best.
Right.
It's fun, a guy really to watch as you could find doing that.
Right, man, I'm playing NHL 94 now. And he was old then.
That's right.
But that those are some of the things that I'd like to see this team focus on, whether it's through draft, free agency, trade, or whatnot, is retooling to get some of those things that we're seeing in the evolved NHL. I mean, Peter Laviolette was part of that. He really was part of that evolution of this team to focus on offense when it's so defensive driven and holding back and scoring timely goals under Barry Trotz. And even he's evolved now with the two teams that he's been with after the Predators at the Capitals and the Islanders. But that evolution of the game that we saw Peter Laviolette, it kind of tired out here. But in the next evolution, I think John Hines does have a good balanced system overall. We didn't see that. We haven't had a full training camp. And also, folks, for those that are saying fire him, he's not going anywhere right now. He hasn't even had a full season. I don't think that change is going to happen. But
well, I also think he's done a lot of good things.
Yeah, I do like the way that what he's been doing. We saw it during training camp. But I think underneath him, I think there could be some changes in the assistant coaching staff because there are some holdovers from the Laviolette staff.
Yeah.
So if you're wanting change at the head coach position, I don't think you're going to get it. But I think there's very much a potential that you have it in the assistant coaching positions.
Well, the net front presence thing, too, you know, like tried Wayne Simmonds, and they've tried a few different guys to come in here. And I guess overall, I look at this roster, and I do think sometimes did they go a little too speed skill and not be heavy enough? That's apart from the personality stuff we've been talking about. Do they need to be heavier somewhere?
I mean, power forward is a good position to look at. And when I look at this, it's in the system right now. If he can continue to make his strides, that's Igor Afanasyev. Dude's a beast, and he's a Russian beast.
And you say his name perfectly already.
I try. But he's a beast in the OHL with Spitfires, and he's been representing Russia as well in a tournament. And he is the making of a true power forward. He's big, but he has a great shot. And he can score, and he can use his body. And that's one of those things that is developing into his body as he gets stronger because he's a kid still. I mean, he's a teenager. But continuing to do that because he's, what, 6'4", 6'5", I think? He's tall. And you put him on skates, he's really tall, but he can score. Working a little bit on his skating, but he's that making of a power forward that's the next generation of it, of a guy that can score. When we look back, and whether you like him or not, Jason Arnott was a power forward for the Predators, and he did good things for the short time that he was here. Philip Forsberg has that potential to be a real power forward as well. We've seen the butt check.
We've seen
how he can, you know, get guys out of position as well. But Afanasyev's even bigger. And seeing that he can be a specialist on a power play too, that he's going to create room for himself. So I think that's something in the system, as long as he can continue to progress, that I think it's fine. I think he's 2 years out unless they go with a full youth movement and give an opportunity. But I think he's going to make a great impression at the next camp for the Predators, to where maybe they give him a game or two before sending him back, just to see what he's capable of doing in the NHL.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that the youth, some level of youth yes. movement is due now.
It is.
Like Tolvanen, you mentioned, I mean, I know, like on the power play, I know Tolvanen is an asset for this team. Now, you still have to get to the point where you can earn that spot, earn that time, but I think a real look there, and of course, if you're the Preds, a real good, not summer, fall from Tolvanen would be very beneficial.
Absolutely. Okay. Up next, we're going to cover what's going on everywhere else in the news aside from Predators hockey and college football. Let's recap the Titans, Nashville SC coming back, what's going on with the NBA, and just going to kind of broadly cover everything going on, get you caught up
in
the sports
world.
Yeah, we'll hit it all. Up next, your Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is Amy Brown from Feeling Things with Amy and Kat. Back to school season always feels like a fresh start, not just for kids, but for all of us. It's a great reminder to create new routines and find meaningful ways to connect with our family, friends, and community. Hasbro Games make it easy to gather around the table. Put the screens away, share some laughs, and create joyful memories together. Whether it's Monopoly, Connect Four, Guess Who, or another family favorite, there's something for everyone. You can find these and other Hasbro favorites at your local Walmart, walmart.com, or simply tap the link in today's show notes to bring more play into your week.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps, head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.